Welcome to SDPB's Teacher Talk, where two teachers and a journalist explore what it means to choose teaching as a profession. I'm the journalist, Lori Walsh. Before we get to today's conversation, a little more about our Teacher Talk educators. Jackie Wilbur is a faculty member at the University of South Dakota and director of the Center for Student and Professional Services in the School of Education. She's been a teacher, a librarian, and an administrator. She's also an experienced registered yoga teacher. Gina Benz teaches at Roosevelt High School and helped develop the Teacher Pathway Program. She's adjunct faculty at the University of Sioux Falls and the University of South Dakota. Here's our conversation.
It is complicated because we can't just say phones are banned and then all of a sudden every kid complies and every teacher complies and life is a utopia.
Yeah, this is so much part of our culture that we have to think this through. Plus, Jackie, you pointed out that these decisions should be made based on research and that research is still emerging. So part two is what emerging research says about cell phone bans. Mm-hmm. And you can find a link to all the research that we're going to talk about on our website, sdpb.org/teachertalk. Jackie, you did some diving. Tell us some of the things that you found. Where do you want to begin?
I did do some diving. I want to start with a disclaimer that says this is not my area of research. So I am not personally researching cell phone bans and their mm-hmm. implications in the classroom. But after our conversation last week, it's been showing up kind of in my area, too, where this emerging research is coming out, because we have had cell phones for a relatively short time and then policies on cell phones in schools for a relatively short time. And so they're it's just now becoming measurable to see what the impacts are and what best practices are for yeah. cell phones.
So some of the ways you measure outcomes in education have to be graduation rates and test scores. Are there other things that I'm not thinking of that when you are measuring things in education, mm-hmm. what do you already set up to measure?
There's so many different approaches in research methodology. The things you're talking about are quantitative test scores, numbers, results, data that we can look at. You know, if a school, like a very simple, if one school has cell phone bans, do they graduate at a higher rate than a school that does not have cell phone bans? And then you also have to factor in all of the other complicating factors of what state is that in and what is the population of the students there and how would that play into the results of this study? So complicated in that way. And then there's qualitative measures. So you can conduct surveys, you can ask students, you can ask teachers, you can ask administrators what their lived experiences are and then see what trends emerge from those conversations. Are people saying similar things across the lines that we can kind of say this is the general consensus or themes that are emerging from talking to people about these bans?
Yeah. Gina, what would you add to that, even as a teacher in the classroom, where you're thinking about measuring outcomes from a qualitative and quantitative way?
The qualitative would seem like it's the simplest, most reliable. However, there's so many factors that go into student achievement. And to just say phones are the factor that impacted student achievement is really a hard thing to do because there's pandemics that affect it. There's mm-hmm. community issues. There's family issues.
Right. Whether you ate breakfast or not, maybe. So you can't mm-hmm. do a study with rats and cell phones mm-hmm. in the classroom.
Mm-hmm. So
you're only doing a real world kind of measurement. So it would be unethical to say these kids had a cell phone ban and they didn't graduate.
Mm-hmm. It's again.
You see where I'm going
again.
There
it's
with it.
Complicated.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
The phrase is correlation is not causation.
Yeah.
Just because these things mm-hmm. match up and are correlated doesn't mean it caused it. So, right. And that's what you're pointing to there. I then am very excited about the research that Angela Lee Duckworth, who's one of my favorite researchers, and just all around very interesting people. She recognized what this conversation is happening nationwide and that people are implementing different kinds of cell phone bans. They're coming at it from many different angles. And so she is currently conducting research to just ask teachers and administrators to input the data into their form. What are the policies at your school? How does it work? What are some of the things that you're seeing? And so she's collecting the data nationwide right at the present moment. It's called Phones in Focus. Any educator who's listening, any administrator who's listening, can go onto her website and take the survey to contribute to her body of work.
Yeah. And I did it.
Did you?
Okay.
Tell us about it.
I did. And so it's more qualitative because you're giving your estimates and your experiences as a teacher. And I would say don't do it until – it's best to do it when you've experienced a change in policy and make sure you've experienced both types of policy. Okay. So, for instance, it really is too early for me to do it because there's been a change in policy in my school, but I haven't fully experienced that.
Okay. So you're going from one policy to the next, but you haven't really seen how it plays out.
Right. And so it looked to me like there's a big comparison between what was it like with this policy versus mm-hmm. this
okay.
policy.
Okay. That makes sense. All right. We're going to get back to Angela Duckworth's work in a moment, but I want to go through Gina and Jackie some of the other studies that Jackie, you have pointed out on this blog, which is a study out of Texas at first from West Texas A&M. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about bell-to-bell phone ban use.
Yes. So I read about this study on my favorite publication, Education Week, which I cite often here. Mm-hmm. And they referred to Bridget Whaley's West Texas A&M University study. And she was studying Texas high schools that had a bell-to-bell ban, meaning that students could not have their cell phones all day. And they put them in pouches, which is a practice that I've heard about in many different school districts where students kind of have to put their phone in a locker or a pouch or some sort of safe away area. And then they can't access them until, depending on the school district, till they say.
Right.
At this school that she studied, it was that they checked them in at the beginning of the day and they picked them up at the end of the day. That research at that particular high school, she found that there were fewer classroom distractions and that there seemed to be more face-to-face interactions among students. But they didn't really have any conclusive academic outcomes, and it does sound like the consistency of the policy enforcement impacted the study. So it doesn't sound like every teacher required every student every day to put sure. their cell phone into the pouch, which is, having been in that classroom, I can very much understand how that takes place. We're talking about human beings. So yeah. the idea that it would be implemented at a 100% perfect execution rate would be, I don't know, I can't imagine of anything in education that goes that way.
Right. And so, Gina brought that up last week. That was one of the challenges here, was that teacher, I'm going to spend my energy on this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sometimes yeah. there's mm-hmm. more pressing issues, actually.
Right. Yeah. Okay, keep going, Jackie. Yeah.
So that's pretty much what that study found, is that there was decreased classroom distractions, there was increased face-to-face interactions with students, and that they couldn't really conclude anything about academic accomplishments or achievements yeah. based on the study.
The Digital Wellness Lab Review. Mm-hmm. Tell us about this one.
This one I also found on Education Week. So this Digital Wellness Lab Review took in multiple studies from that were kind of at the smaller scale and just did a review of them, meaning they just read through the studies and tried to find mm-hmm. if there were trends that came across the various studies. And they found that there is a reduction in multitasking, so students can focus on one thing at a time, and that can be correlated with better test scores. But the studies themselves didn't say students who didn't use their phones during the day had better test scores. They said students who didn't use their phone during the day were better at focusing, and students who focus better generally get better test scores. Mm. And then they also, though, found that there are benefits to cell phones, particularly right. for low-income students who then have more access to the internet and other tools. And so they're created a little bit more technology equity by being able to have cell phones.
In school, because in some school. Of those students might be going home and not have access to technology. School might be the only place
right.
that they have it. Right. Whereas the students with a higher income presumably might go home and catch up on all the lost technology mm-hmm. time. Mm-hmm. Okay, mm-hmm. interesting. Yep.
And these studies, Oof. Too, were not able to conclude one way or another if there was any impact on academic or student learning.
All right. And then the students, what the students have to say. And Gina, you really talked about this in the first part of this two-part series. What the students have to say about this matters, because they're the ones who are using the devices.
Yeah. For some of them, it's an issue of feeling safe and feeling like they belong. And we know from Maslow's hierarchy of needs that meeting physiological needs, safety needs, and belonging needs have to happen before really deep, rich academic learning can mm-hmm. occur. So a lot of students' arguments would be that the phone helps them feel safe and that they belong.
Right. They're not fighting that anxiety all day
mm-hmm.
Or that connectivity. Okay. Jackie, you found an Atlantic article talking about what students have to say about this. That's an important perspective.
I thought this article was phenomenal. It's called What Kids Told Us About How to Get Them Off of Their Phones.
Mm-hmm.
And what the students were saying is that they feel that they have more freedom online than they do in real life. So, for instance, they can play the game Roblox and interact freely with other people who are playing the game at the same time. But they are not permitted to go out in public on their own. Right. So they're supervised in public and they have more freedom online is their perception.
But online they can meet any stranger there is. Right.
Right. I mean, there is that depending on the parameters that are set up for them in their life mm-hmm. with their parents or guardians program settings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that tracks with that feels very real.
Yes.
That feels real. Growing up when I did 80s, 90s, there was a real fear of people abducting children. Mm-hmm. And when that happened to Jacob Wetterling, that especially was driven home. So I can see why people have the fear, but I wish kids were outside more and playing with each other. And
well, it's probably more than just a fear of the worst happening, the unthinkable, uh-huh. the abduction. It's also a fear of not knowing where your kid is, not knowing whether they fell off their bike, not knowing...
Yeah.
I mean, all these other things that parents would be concerned about. And so kids are saying, yeah, I can't take a... I remember in high school, there was a kid who just moved to town. His dad was a pastor. And we all were going for a ride on a Saturday morning on the bike trails. And we asked him to go with. And his father said, no, he wasn't going to allow him to ride on the bike trails by himself. And we're like, well, you're not by yourself. You're with us. You know, we're friends going for a ride on the bike trails. And he was like, absolutely not. They were new in town. I don't know how that person grew up or anything, but I remember learning the difference between parents who would let you just like take a bike ride
mm-hmm.
and parents who weren't. Mm-hmm. And so then if you have a computer game where you can go where you want to go, that might feel liberating.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
So the article also said that there seems to be the narrative from the student's perspective that kids are addicted to their phones, they always want to be on them, and that they can't go without. But when asked if they to pick their favorite way to spend time with their friends, one being in person, unstructured play, like shooting baskets or playing in the neighborhood or just being in a little league game, something like that,
sure.
That was pickup, not something that was organized by adults, but like so little league is maybe not the right example, a pickup baseball game, for instance,
mm-hmm.
They would choose that over interacting online every time. That was the clear winner. And so the students are saying it's the freedom that we're longing for, according to this article. It's not that we're addicted to our phones. We want the freedom, and that's where the freedom exists, is online.
So, Jackie, does that extend to the classroom, that students would like more freedom in the classroom to make more of their own choices for how they learn, how they demonstrate their understanding?
This article does not go into that. This is purely related to phones and what students are saying about their phone use, not mm-hmm. necessarily in the classroom. I think that assumption could be made, but that the article doesn't indicate one way or the other.
But it does bring up the important point, which is student cell phone bans that are successful will most likely have student input.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think about that a lot. How many decisions?
Ask them. Yeah.
Yeah. How
Ask
many decisions them. Do we make at school without ever consulting with students? How many times do we assume we know what students want and we haven't really asked them?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's fascinating.
It is. And that's what I appreciated about this article is I hadn't thought about why do they think they are on their phones? And pretty singular voice, it's not unanimous, but it seemed like the overarching message coming from students that were interviewed in this survey was we want more freedom, and the freedom exists on our phones.
Mm-hmm. Which goes back to what we were saying last week about how our culture is designed. When you say a pickup baseball game, especially baseball in the town that I live in, there are fewer places for that because most of those fields have been consolidated into a complex mm-hmm. where structured adult organized baseball games are played.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where in my neighborhood kids would go for a pickup baseball game unless mm-hmm. they want to play at a recess, like a blacktop, you know, school recess playground. That's the word I'm looking for. Mm-hmm. Unless they went to the local playground. Mm-hmm. Probably be easier to play basketball at the local playground than to play baseball.
It makes me think about recess, too.
Mm-hmm. And right.
How quickly we lose recess.
Exactly. The importance of recess, the importance of that unstructured mm-hmm. time.
Where they learn
right.
how to use unstructured time.
And another question then would be, if they're using their phone to look things up, what's their access to the library? You know, in the school day, what sort of access to information they have that's not information on their phone? If you're going to do research, how much time do your student get to go to a place, i.e. the library, where they can sit? Just yesterday or last week, I was talking about libraries and newspapers, and I'm like, libraries and research mm-hmm. for kids and cell phones. You shrink that library, you're shrinking all the access to stuff they have because, oh, it's on their phone, but now you've made the only place they can find it on their phone. And now they have to always be on their phone.
I mean, I have not been in a high school classroom in some time, but my students went to the library once a week. I mean, but also that makes sense given who I am and the subject matter that I taught. Yeah. So, I'm a big fan of taking students to the library. I'm talking to preaching to the choir here for me.
But even reference books. I mean, now I'm really going to go off on my kick. But as a journalist, you know, I want to be surrounded by dictionaries and AP style guides and how much of that has been moved to online, mm-hmm. And I wouldn't have to spend as much screen time if I had those reference books in front of me.
It's true, you know.
So there's that balanced technology use is what we're getting at here. Balanced technology mm-hmm. use.
For mm-hmm. libraries to maintain those reference books and keep them updated, that's very expensive. Mm-hmm. We certainly are teaching students how to use databases, which our libraries subscribe to, and so there they can get sources that are reliable and peer-reviewed. Mm-hmm. So we are showing them how to do very important academic research or just reliable research.
Yes. I'm just giving a shout out to librarians.
But
I love that.
I do miss the days myself of sitting in the library and going through the reader's guide to periodical literature.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I understand that there's databases mm-hmm. and you're not going to subscribe to every print magazine. You're mm-hmm. going to have a database to that. I mean, I'm not arguing that. I'm just saying, you know, access to time to do research outside of your phone, because sometimes the fastest way is to quick check in and look something up on your phone.
Well, and research shows that students tend to learn better, to understand the information better when they're reading from paper than from a screen.
Hmm. Lori, I'll have to send you an article. I need to dig it up again. I read it a while ago, but it's about a group of young people who started a Luddite club, and they are expressing exactly your sentimentality, which is that I believe all of them just have flip phones so that they don't have the internet on their phone. They only read paper books. They're just, it's a movement, you know? And so I think you're president of the club, which I love.
These are my people.
Actually, my own daughter has expressed a desire to start that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Interesting. All right. So back to Angela Duckworth's Phones in Focus. The whole point of this is that there is more research coming in. We need to be intentional about the research that we're studying to find out what the benefits of phones and the downside of them. Mm-hmm. Get student input. Be consistent.
It seems like that's the key.
Consistency is really big. Yeah.
It's really big. Really mm-hmm. hard, mm-hmm. which might seem surprising. Just make them.
Right.
But as Jackie said, it's a human industry and things happen. But consistency is important.
What does Duckworth say, Jackie, about willpower? And just these kids are addicted and they need to just put their phone down.
Right.
Put it down. Look up from your screen. Go outside.
Her research, as I've been saying, it's not done yet. You can still go complete this survey right now. So she has not released any results. But she did speak this May at the Penn commencement, as the commencement speaker at Penn. And she talked about this concept of willpower and used a phone as an example. So she said it's not enough to just put your phone down and willpower yourself to not look at it and focus. That's not how willpower works. It just doesn't function that way. What you need to do is manipulate your environment, or she calls it situation modifications, where you change the scenery and the setup around you so that you're not thinking about your phone. And then you don't have to use any willpower to stop yourself from it. It's like sitting in front of a bowl of ice cream and then demanding that you don't eat it is basically the analog. And so she's saying, I think, I don't know that she would say that this is what the research is telling her now. She's not releasing any results. But based on this speech, I'm getting the sense that she's going to encourage folks to create classroom environments where we don't think about our phones as much, that they have, and these are best practices that teachers are already doing and already know, but where we're wanting to interact in a way that doesn't make us think about our phones. Mm. And we're wanting to have these in-person, face-to-face, non-distracted, engaging times in the classroom.
Yeah.
I experienced that. I can attest to it. I had an English class that was very eclectic in its makeup. You know, I had skater kids. I had the kids who love to work on cars, kids who are into boxing, athletes, musicians. It was eclectic, which I love because I think students should get to know a diverse group of people. And I used what we call Kagan structures. And so these are structures to facilitate communication face-to-face with partners and small groups and the whole group. And later on in the semester, the students shared with me, you know, normally with this class being right up against lunch, I would probably skip this class more often than I do. Well, actually, I don't, but I would skip it more often but I really like the people in here. I really feel like I want to show up for everybody. Mm. And I really attribute that to my intentional face-to-face discussion time, work time together that the students had. And there were really hardly any, only one student did I have to remind to put his phone away. All the others were engaged with each other and enjoying each other.
So that helps attendance too, which is an outcome you could measure. Mm-hmm. Would be attendance. You're hearing anecdotally mm-hmm. that it's helping attendance, and you could probably have numbers that would back that up.
Yeah.
Whew. Well, I would refer people back to, there was a blog post that you did about designing your room.
Oh, yes.
Too. So that, you know, if you're just starting out in your fourth grade or you're a high school teacher, ask some of your mentor teachers how to design a room that is interesting and holds people's attention and creates a space that you want created versus just, you know, a row of desks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I like to have my room in a U shape so that we're all, the idea is that we all have a seat at the table. It makes a table. Some people do in pods where maybe a group of four people all face each other. Some just do partnerships. But something to facilitate talking, I think, is super important because it facilitates engagement.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Any final thoughts, Jackie, on this, what you're looking for next? This is a really great, great conversation.
Yes.
And I think very useful.
Agreed. No, I think the final thought I have is that this is the partnership that higher education professionals have with K through 12 professionals, which is that we are talking to each other in this way. What is coming up in your field that you need to have more information about? We will study that. How are you implementing practices in your classroom? We will study that and then report the results back so that people can continue to improve on both sides of K-12 and higher education. So, like I said, this isn't my field. Cell phone policies is not an area of research for me, but I do like this back and forth conversation that both we're having here and then that's happening on this larger scale.
Yeah. If you enjoy SDPB's Teacher Talk, tell your BFAW, that is your best friend at work, tell your administrator, tell the next generation of educators that this is a place to learn about the highs and, yes, the lows of the profession from people who love what they do. You can share, like, and rate the podcast. That helps us find our place in today's crowded audio ecosystem. Teacher Talk airs on SDPB's In the Moment Tuesdays. You can find all the companion blogs with links to the research on our website, sdpb.org/teachertalk, or just click through the podcast feed to get to our episode webpage. We are produced by SDPB's In the Moment team, our youngerman, Ellen Kester. Our engineer is Colton Nicholson, Regina Benz, and Jackie Wilbur. I'm Lori Walsh. Thanks for listening.